Welcome back to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. How are you liking how democracy is working right now with this current run for the White House? Do you like this choice of candidates? Do you feel like your point of view is not on the menu? How does this happen? It's not just happenstance or a strange turn of events. It's by design, says our guest for this half hour, Lawrence Lessig, a Harvard professor of law and author. He's got a firsthand view of all this. He tried running for president as a Democrat and couldn't get on the debate stage. His book is Republic Lost, The Corruption of Equality and the Steps to End It. And Professor Lessig, welcome to The Source.
Great to be back.
Our phone lines are open. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. Email questions and comments to The Source at tpr.org. So you ran for president. How'd that work out?
Well, the big challenge was to go from being someone who no one knew to someone who, according to the rules of the Democratic Party, got 1% in three polls within 6 weeks of the debate, to at least have a chance to be on the debate stage and make the central issue of my contribution, this deep corruption of this crippled and corrupted institution of Congress. And in fact, by the second debate, we had gotten 1% in three polls, and then the Democrats changed the rules. So in the end, I was excluded because of what one friend called larrymandering, as they architected the rules to make it so that I couldn't get on stage.
So do you think this was just bad luck?
No, I think, you know, the Democrats are actually pretty smart to not want an outsider on that stage. What we knew from our polling kind of is confirmed by what the Republicans saw when they had three outsiders on that stage. The public would react pretty strongly to an outsider, somebody not perceived as a politician, making a very strong claim about the need to reform the system first. And that was my, you know, fundamental commitment, that I would pass a series of reforms that would break the corruption that has hobbled Congress and make it incapable of for Congress to do anything, whether it's things Republicans want or things Democrats want. This isn't a partisan point. It's just a reality of this failed institution at the core of our democracy.
So what is this corruption? Isn't this how Washington is supposed to work?
No. No one ever imagined, certainly our framers never imagined, that members of Congress and candidates for Congress would spend 30 to 70% of their time sucking up to a tiny, tiny fraction of the 1% to raise the money they need to run for Congress or to get their party back into power. And that reality is something that is really quite recent. I think, you know, it's 1995 that begins the process of the change of the norms in Congress to bring about, you know, an institution where the members are basically fundraisers, low-paid fundraisers, relative to what fundraisers typically get, and no longer representatives. And the second consequence, really much more important, is that the institution has become a completely failed institution. You know, when we think about these candidates for president talking about all the things they're going to do, this is a game of fantasy politics, because what everybody knows is that when they get to Washington, and whether it's a Republican or Democrat, they start talking about the things they want to do, these interests that have such incredible power inside of Washington will be able to block reform and to make it impossible for them to achieve any of the ambitious plans that Democrats or Republicans are talking about.
So now it costs over $1 million to run for Congress, much more than that now, to run for Senate and President. Where does all that money go? How do they spend that money?
Well, you know, unfortunately, I spend tons of it on negative ads, negative TV ads, and an increasing amount on, you know, just on consultants and the infrastructure of running campaigns. But, you know, my view is that the real problem isn't so much the spending, even though I think the way it's spent is just horrendous. The real problem is the way it's raised. You know, if you just imagine the psychology of spending such an extraordinary amount of time begging for money, from powerful people. That's not a practice that produces leaders. That's a practice that produces sycophants, people who can't begin to think about how to lead or to think about problems in a different way. They've got to think about the problems they face in a way that they know will not alienate their funders. That's the dynamic of a member of Congress right now. There are, you know, a few exceptions. There are important exceptions. But the point is, the institution as a whole has been corrupted by this way that they raise money.
Right, but I think the spending is part of the issue, because if they're spending the bulk of that money on television ads, and if it's instrumental in trying to educate the public and with using, you got to use TV to tell people what's going on, if we need to change the system, that message is not going to get out. I mean, I've seen news executives doing dances in the newsroom because of the thought of all that money coming in from these TV ads.
Oh yeah, states like New Hampshire have incredibly wealthy television stations because they get this incredible infusion of money into their coffers, you know, during this election cycle when all of the ads are basically bought by these presidential campaigns. But you know, let's not romanticize what these ads are doing. These are not civics lessons. These are not, you know, efforts at helping us understand complicated issues in a way that makes it so that we're better voters. These are the basest, most psychologically subtle character attacks that make it so it's incredibly hard for you to imagine voting for the other side. Whether you want to vote for the side that's running the ads or not is a different question. You just become so disgusted with both sides that, you know, most people turn away. They don't want to have anything to do with it. And that's a product of the way in which we know these ads work most effectively. And that's, you know, another problem to our political system, but it's not the corruption that I'm talking about.
So you say there's a corruption of equality and tweedism. What is that?
Well, you know, Boss Tweed, the guy used to run Tammany Hall in New York, famous criminal, also pretty good political philosopher, used to say, "I don't care who does the electing, as long as I get to do the nominating." And what he meant by that was, you know, if you get to pick the candidates or pick who gets to run, you have as much power as the people who are doing the electing, because anybody who wants to run knows they've got to keep you happy. Well, we've basically replicated Tweed, that same system, but the Tweeds now are not political bosses like Boss Tweed. The Tweeds are the funders of campaigns. And what candidates know is that they have to keep those funders happy. Paul Krugman had an article about in the middle of September about Republicans talking about Social Security programs or plans, Republican candidates for presidents, which the base of the Republican Party hate. And his question was, why were they promoting plans which we know the base of the Republican Party just would reject? And the answer is, even if the base hates it, the funders of those campaigns love those plans. So you begin to have candidates who are more concerned about these gatekeepers, these funders, these tweeds, as I call them, then ultimately the voters, because what they know is once you keep the tweeds happy, you at least can be on the stage, and if you don't, you can't be in the field.
Boss Tweed was actually eventually elected to Congress himself, and he thought he was bored with it. He thought it was a step down.
Yeah, well, I can understand that. He would certainly think it down if he had to spend all of his time raising money.
Right, so we're talking with Lawrence Lessig. His book is Republic Lost, The Corruption of Equality and the Steps to End It. He's got a roadmap in here about how to deal with the problems of money in politics. We've got your phone lines are open. If you're going to call in, you got a question or a comment, what do you think about all the money in politics? Do you think it is not serving America well? Let's hear your voice. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be back in 1 minute. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. There's too much money in American politics. Larry Lessig says, if you want to save the republic, that money needs to go. Lessig is a Harvard professor of constitutional law. He recently ran for president as a Democrat, didn't get very far, and he's going to explain what's happening to politics. But first, Professor Lessig, I want to ask you, since you do constitutional law, what do you think about Ted Cruz's eligibility? Is he a natural-born citizen? He was born in Canada.
Yeah, so it's a complicated question, actually, it turns out. It turns out not just on where he was born, but the citizenship of his mother versus father. Because if you're somebody who thinks that we should interpret the Constitution the way the framers did, they would have said the question was really the citizenship of the father, and so he's got, you know, double strikes here. But I think more modern interpretations would say, look, if he was a citizen automatically, that's the way to think of natural born, just by virtue of who his parents were, then he should qualify. My own view is that this should be an irrelevant. This is completely irrelevant and shouldn't, and it's just politics to be playing it, and that the Supreme Court would never step in and disqualify him. So we should let the voters decide whether Ted Cruz should be president, not a bunch of judges reading a document that's 200 and some years old.
But Blackstone would say, no, he cannot be president.
Right. That's the original view. Now, you know, whether you apply the original meaning in that way, of course, Ted Cruz would say yes. I mean, this is the interesting irony that my colleague Larry Tribe has pressed. Ted Cruz's way of interpreting the Constitution means Ted Cruz can't be president. But he's advancing an interpretation of the Constitution that he does not believe in, which is basically the modern interpretation, the modern meaning of the Constitution, and under that view, he should be president.
And his
support, he could be president.
And his supporters also have that view. Many of them do. Let's go to the phone lines. The number is 210-614-8980. And Sam is on the line. And Sam, you're on the air with Larry Lessig.
Hi. And I appreciate what you're trying to do, Mr. Lessig. Having spent quite a bit of time in politics, I finally had to leave. Because after a period of time, all the bloom, you know, comes off the rose, and when you, like you said, when you see that all the candidates are going to do once they're elected is work to get reelected, it causes a great deal of cynicism to come about. One thing I wanted to mention is what I've seen in this election cycle and in the last few is that there is such a stark difference and some of the philosophies of the candidates, and I'd say compare Donald Trump and Ted Cruz to Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders, that people supporting one or the other are willing to accept deep character flaws so they can support they can elect the lesser of two evils. And I'll hang up and listen to your comments on that. Thank you.
All right, Sam, thanks for the call.
Well, it's a complicated picture right now because, you know, why they're supporting different people, you know, at this stage is a very hard thing to interpret, right? Why are people supporting Donald Trump at this stage? You know, I think part of the support for Donald Trump comes from him just being such a clear, visceral outsider to the political process, and people's frustration and anger with the political process is just so overwhelming. But, you know, as people get closer to the election, it's hard to know exactly how that view matures or dissolves. And so it might be that they're making the choice of the lesser of two evils at that stage, and at this stage they're expressing a stronger personal view. But I think this election cycle has been very difficult to predict, and I'm not going to get into the mistake of trying to make even more predictions now.
Back to the phone lines with David. And David, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, you just mentioned Donald Trump. So one Trump supporter I met the other day, the first one I've ever met actually, said, well, he's not beholden to anyone. He's only beholden to himself because all the money's coming from himself. So that may be the only thing he's got going for him. But what I think we ought to do is stop having these primary elections, and just anyone who wants to run for president, run for president. We have a popular vote, and if the group of candidates that together garner at least 50% have a runoff, and we keep on going till we get somebody who wins. Now, sure, there's still going to be money involved, but I think this whole business about where you talk about Tweed and the I just want to control the nomination, and you end up voting for the lesser of two evils in the end. It's either Republican or Democrat because you think you're throwing away your vote on a third party. That would reform things quite a bit.
All right, David, thanks for that question. Appreciate that point. So is that something that would require a constitutional convention to change the way that we select presidents and our representatives?
Well, we would have to amend the Constitution to change it in that way. I think it's important to I completely agree that part of the strong support for Trump, especially originally, came from him clearly calling out the corrupting influence of money in the process and saying he was the one person that wouldn't be corrupted. But now, whether it's true that he's taking money or not is a separate question, but he certainly is perceived to be somebody who doesn't depend on these funders. He's independent of them. And I think a lot of people say, you know, that's what we need. We need politicians like that. Now, the problem is, you know, Donald Trump is able to be independent because he's a billionaire. And the idea that we ought to be just electing billionaires to avoid this kind of corruption is a little crazy. You know, the idea of electing billionaires is what we fought revolution against. It was to send the aristocracy back to Britain that we set up a republic, which, you know, we should have the ability to have independent representatives without requiring them to be the super rich. So that's why I agree with Trump that this is the problem, but I don't agree that he's given us anything like a solution. I also think, you know, the primaries have become an incredibly distorting process because it's the base, which tends to be the polarized base, that is showing up in these primaries, in the Democratic side and the Republican side. So you see Republicans appealing very strongly to the far right, and you see the Democrats, you know, having an enormous surge on the far on the left right now, which I think the parties in general worry that when it comes to a general election, they need to appeal to much more than just the extremes on either the left or the right.
But we've seen a disappearance of the center. That's been one of the observations about modern politics.
Absolutely. During the whole primary process, the center is just not there.
But you have written about constitutional conventions. That's something that our governor, Greg Abbott, has recently brought up. And I know that you tweeted that you agreed that a convention would be needed, but not with along his lines. You have a different view.
Well, that's right. First, it's really important to be clear. This is not a constitutional convention. Under the Constitution, we can create a convention to propose amendments. That's it. A constitutional convention, in theory, could change the Constitution. But a convention under Article 5 of the Constitution only has the power to make a proposal. And a proposal is only part of the Constitution if three-fourths of the states, 38 states, support it. Now, you know, what that means is 13 houses in 13 states could block any proposed constitution, which means that it's almost impossible to imagine a far right or a far left wing amendment coming through the process and surviving. The only amendments that would ever pass were ones that had bipartisan support. So I'm all in favor of a process for getting ideas onto the table that Congress doesn't itself control, because in my view, it's Congress which is the failed institution of our government. We have to find a way around it if we're ever going to reform the process.
What if the next president of the United States appoints people to the Supreme Court? We have turnover on the Supreme Court, and this new majority is able to undo Citizens United, say that money is not free speech, and get money out of politics that way.
Well, you know, that still wouldn't be enough. And this is why I'm constantly insisting that this is not just a problem created by the Supreme Court. You know, if the Supreme Court reversed, then Congress could pass a law restricting the amount of money that people were spending. But regardless of the amount that was being spent, if we raise it from the tiniest fraction of the 1%, we still produce this dynamic that we see right now where everybody bends over backwards to keep that tiny fraction happy while at the same time ignoring what the vast majority of Americans want. So we need to get a representative democracy, which means they want to represent all of us, not just the tiny fraction that funds the campaigns. And that's only going to happen if Congress steps up and enacts, you know, Republicans are calling for voucher proposals where everybody gets a voucher to help fund campaigns. Democrats have matching fund proposals where small contributions are matched up to 9-to-1. Whichever of those you adopt, or what, you know, maybe a mix of those two, both of them would radically increase the number of people who participate in funding the campaigns, so that we don't have the system, this tweetus system, where the funders are basically calling the shots and the funders are not the people.
We've seen several states that have adopted ways of getting some money out of their state politics. Have you seen results?
Connecticut and Maine and Arizona all have systems for electing state offices with small dollar public funding. And what that produces is systems where these representatives don't have to spend all of their time raising money. And Republicans and Democrats alike in these states love this system because what they do is raise their money very quickly in the period where they're supposed to raise their small contributions to demonstrate that they're viable. Then they get matching funds from the state, and then they just go back to doing their job. And I think if people begin to look at these examples and recognize that we could do the same thing at the federal level for, you know, a fraction of the cost that we spend in our foreign wars in just 1 month, then we could begin to get a democracy back that was actually responsive to the people and not responsive to the cronies who are funding these campaigns.
But in these states, are we seeing bills that are being passed that are more responsive to the people and not just corporate instruments?
Absolutely. I mean, for example, in Connecticut, you know, the one of the most infamous blockages has always been around bottle bills, where the bottle bill had been passed in the 1970s and had never been updated. Every year it would come up. The lobbyists for the bottling companies would block it. The very first bill that came up after they made the change was this bottle bill to unleash these millions of dollars that was being held in escrow. And that was something that could never have happened if the lobbyists had still been in there on the floor.
Lawrence Lessig, a Harvard professor of law, author of the book Republic Lost, The Corruption of Equality and the Steps to End It, also a former candidate for president under the Democratic banner. Thank you so much, Lawrence. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
And this is The Source on KSTX. Thanks for tuning us in.